Every Woman is a feminist show about women making a difference and the men by their side. As 50% of the world's population and 52% of eligible U.S. voters, women are not a special interest group, and every woman should work and vote toward nothing less than 50-50 participation in social, political, economic, and environmental arenas. The opinions and views expressed on Every Woman are those of the host and guest and do not necessarily represent those of the KKFI board, staff, volunteers, or sponsors of KKFI and the Mid-Coast Radio Project, Incorporated. Good afternoon, everyone. We have a full house live in studio. I am Ebony Johnson, and we have Sharon Lockhart here and Amy Bell. And Michelle Markey, who's our special guest today, talking about women in entrepreneurship. And Lucas, Amy's husband, who's taking photos of us today. So you'll see us on the website. And, excuse me, Beth Wilkinson is here as well.
Taylor.
And Taylor, Michelle's daughter, is in studio. So we have a full house for you today. And we're going to come back and talk about women in entrepreneurship with Michelle after a bit of news. President Obama has nominated Carla D. Hayden as the next Librarian of Congress. If confirmed, she should be the first woman and first African-American woman ever to lead the world's largest library. As the 14th Librarian of Congress, Hayden says her position would affect, quote, how people view the future of libraries and what a national library can be. It's inclusive. It can be part of everyone's story. NPR reported February 24th. According to a proposed bill filed February 11th by two Republican Illinois state lawmakers, if a father is not listed on a newborn's birth certificate, the birth certificate will not be issued and any future financial assistance will be denied. The proposed bill will amend the Illinois Vital Records Act to require that unwed mothers either name a father on the birth certificate or within 30 days go to court and have another family member sign the birth certificate and agree to accept financial responsibility for the child. If a single mother fails to name the father or identify another guardian, the child will not be issued a birth certificate, and the family will be permanently banned from public assistance. The bill makes no exception for rape or incest victims. Under current law, an unmarried father is not named on the birth certificate unless he signs a voluntary acknowledgement of paternity. Salon reported February 25th. And for our Black History highlight, actress Hattie McDaniel was born on June 10, 1893, in Wichita, Kansas. By the mid-1920s, she became one of the first African-American women on the radio. In 1934, she landed her on-screen break in the film Judge Priest. She then became the first African-American to win an Oscar in 1940 for her role as Mammy in Gone with the Wind. And that is our news and Black History highlight for today. And I'd like to officially introduce you to our guest in the studio, Michelle Markey, who is the Vice President of Kauffman's Fast Track Program, which is a global provider of educational programs for entrepreneurs. The Kauffman Foundation's mission is to advance entrepreneurship as a key to growing economies and expanding human welfare. Michelle is also the author of She Venture, Success Strategies for Female Entrepreneurs, a book to help women as they launch, develop, and grow businesses. And we are delighted to have you in the studio with us today, Michelle. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thanks for coming. So talk to us about a little bit about what entrepreneurship is, and then I know you've brought some materials for us to share specifically with women, and we'll kind of get into that as a path for financial independence as well.
Right. So there's such wonderful opportunities in entrepreneurship today. We are seeing more and more women think about taking their business idea and actually pursuing that, determining if they have a feasible idea, and then launching that business. So one of the things that we do at the Kauffman Foundation, certainly Fast Track, is provide education and educational resources for people that are interested in in launching businesses. And mm-hmm. for me in particular, although I support all entrepreneurs, I'm specifically very focused on developing women mm-hmm. as they pursue those dreams.
Mm-hmm. And for people that are listening, they may feel like, oh, well, I'm not an entrepreneur or I couldn't start a business. Can you talk to us about your experience with, I don't even know how many women you've worked with, but and then, you know, for yourself as well, what you mean by entrepreneurship and can any woman be an entrepreneur?
Any woman can be an entrepreneur. It's really about determining where their passion lies. You know, do they have a desire to take a business idea and really develop that idea? One of the things that I think is an interesting thing to talk about when we talk about entrepreneurs, so often people think of Bill Gates, Steve Jobs, mm-hmm. Mark Zuckerberg, and for a lot of women, they're saying, I'm not like those people. Mm-hmm. I'm not a man. Yeah. I'm not in Silicon Valley. I didn't attend Stanford. I don't mm-hmm. have access to a ton of capital. Mm-hmm. So when we talk with females that are considering entrepreneurship, one of the things that we need to help them realize is that there are a lot of different definitions of success. And it's not being Mark Zuckerberg necessarily. Mm-hmm. You don't have to have this idea that's brand new and novel and unheard of like Facebook was.
Yeah.
It can be something as simple as saying, I want to develop, I pick a business. You know, it could be anything from an ad agency to mm-hmm. a coffee shop to a PR firm. It could be mm-hmm. it could be anything. Mm-hmm. So we just want to expose women to the idea that it's that brass ring is not that far away. It's yeah. just a matter of learning how to go about the process and then taking steps forward.
Mm-hmm. And what I know on the Kauffman website there's been some information about just the historic culture of entrepreneurship and being maybe more single male dominated. If you're thinking, well, it's for women who have children or mm-hmm. If it's extremely volatile or competitive, that maybe that landscape is changing a bit as more women enter entrepreneurship and is becoming more of a family friendly environment and collaborative.
Right. The foundation just published a policy digest on women and entrepreneurship. And in fact, one of the things that we talk about in this, we call it women are the key to accelerating growth in our economy. And so, but you bring up maybe three of the main points that are areas where we can really support women as they work along this issue of starting. So let me just talk a little mm-hmm. bit about those three and then, we can address that. First yeah. of all, before I get to that, I did want to share, there was something just published this week that Kansas City is number 7 in the U.S. of the top 100 cities in the U.S. with regard to female entrepreneurs. So we live yeah. in a city that is really supportive of female entrepreneurs, and we have so many resources mm-hmm. at the foundation that are open access, free and available to women. So I want to make that clear. Two that I'll mention. One is called Kauffman Founder School. And it's as simple as just Googling Kauffman Founder School. It is a set of video lectures, if you will, that are just in line with kind of key topics that mm-hmm. entrepreneurs struggle with. It's not enough content necessarily to get you to launch a business, but it gets you thinking about okay, kind great. Of concerns. The other thing that I think is really useful, and I want to share with your listeners before I get to these mm-hmm. other three topics, is that every Wednesday at the foundation, we have an educational event called 1 Million Cups. And it is from 9 o'clock to 10 o'clock at the foundation, 4801 Rock Hill Road. And people can come and just listen. There's two entrepreneurs that are kind of previewed each week. Mm-hmm. So they tell about their business, they share their paths, and it's just a community of people that are kind of like-minded. It's very interesting mm-hmm. to do that. No reservations are required, and it's a free event.
And I've attended that event, and it's the energy is great, and you can just listen to people talk about, like you said, talk about their business. It may spark an interest in, you know, in anyone who attends or even being able to connect with other small businesses as a new career path as well.
Absolutely. It's a really, we have a vibrant really a vibrant ecosystem in this city of entrepreneurs and entrepreneurial support. So I urge women to get out, to think about attending those events and not to avoid going to them because they don't feel like they're ready yet as far as being, you know, an entrepreneur. It's okay. You know, you don't have to be this big, successful entrepreneur to take advantage of these resources. So,
It's Wednesday.
It's every Wednesday.
Every Wednesday.
From 9 to 10.
9 to 10. And what's the address again?
It's 4801 Rock Hill Road.
Thank you.
So we're just down, kind of across from UMKC.
Okay.
So easy to get to. And like I said, there's no reservations required. So if somebody decides they want to just show up, they can. The other thing about that event is that sometimes people find it difficult to be able to, because of their work schedules or maybe whatever commitments, hard to get away. We also live stream it. So people can go to Kaufman.org and, or One Million Cups, I'm sorry, One Million Cups website, and there's a live stream button for Kansas City. Okay. So the other things, kind of back to your question, Ebony, that I think are really useful in terms of how we can support women, there are three kind of big key issues. One of those is one that you mentioned. It is still a real valid issue when we talk about work-life balance. And I have a couple data points I want to share with you. The first one is that nearly three-quarters of births are to women between the ages of 20 and 34. And so right away, we recognize that because they're having, they're in their childbearing years and having children, that to have the time to actually throw themselves into entrepreneurship can be a challenge. I don't think it's a barrier. It's just something to know. The other thing is, you know, we see the impact in terms of startup with women because of those concerns. So for people, again, that are considering entrepreneurship in your listening audience, thinking about what sort of endeavor maybe they can enter from maybe a part-time and then evolve it into a full-time or find a way to find some balance in there that's going to be useful for them. The recommendation we give is to consider your personal goals, your professional goals, and your financial goals.
So are you seeing women that feel that they're having to bear more responsibility in raising children, and that's kind of taking away their freedom, at least that they feel, to go out and start a new life path professionally?
Right. That is true. And, you know, the reality is, in the world that we live in now, and with the economies that we're, you know, we're faced with, it's hard to say, well, I'm just going to leave a paying career and go to this, because you do have those concerns. So thinking about these things are they're not, again, I don't want them to be perceived as barriers. I don't believe that they are barriers. I believe that they're things that we do have to, though, negotiate somehow in some way. So there's some really interesting ways to kind of think about embarking on an entrepreneurial endeavor that is not, may not need to be all out, at least at the beginning. And if you can do it that way, that's great.
And I'm reading some data from your website, and you put something in the perspective of chapters. And so different chapters in your life. And so I really like the one for, I was putting that out to Amy because it said something about the new chapter after 50. So that's pretty cool.
Well, you know, it's interesting because, again, females, obviously all walks of life are starting businesses, and we are seeing a really interesting trend among women that are, you know, kind of considered the baby boom group. There's probably not a week or two that goes by that I don't get some request to speak about that topic as well, because females after age 50 are really moving forward with this entrepreneurship.
We talked earlier about how a lot of women don't have the kind of capital at their disposal that they feel would make them a comfortable entrepreneur. And I know that sometimes
you have to ask for capital. You have to seek it. You have to find investors. You have to do things like that. And I've seen numerous reports where women have a harder time getting over that very strange feeling that comes from asking someone else for money.
Yeah, it's true. And it's a challenge. I mean, women do not get the same amount of capital as men do. And one of the other data points I was going to share with you, and again, these are not just opinion, they're actual research that we've conducted. Entrepreneurship is still viewed as a masculine activity primarily. Mm-hmm. And so what the point I was going to share is research has shown that there's a kind of an implicit bias against women as entrepreneurs, where people are less likely to believe that women have the skills to succeed. So my recommendation for women is, and I think this is really true for everybody, but going to ask for capital is one thing, but you have to have your plan. You have to have done your due diligence. You have to be kind of buttoned up as much as you can on having assessed the feasibility of your business, done your market research, have your financials, kind of your predictions, your projections, have them nailed down and be able to answer those questions that people legitimately will have before they invest money. And so spending the time to really kind of get your idea well defined is a real key opportunity.
And some of the tool you mentioned that you can people can Google Kaufman Schools or
Kaufman Founder School.
Kaufman Founder School, just to kind of get them started. And I know, like the Small Business Administration, and like you said, there are different like other incubators that are small business incubators that are in the city that help with things of that nature. Because I can imagine just listening to you, you know, somebody may be thinking, oh my gosh, I don't know the first thing about coming up with some of these things for myself. So I think one of the key things is knowing that there is support to help you even in the initial phases of getting started and fleshing out the idea.
Absolutely. And the Kaufman Founder School content is good, and it's excellent in terms of just the information. But most people aren't going to be able to launch a business just by doing that. So there are two other resources in the city. One is the Small Business Development Center. It's really Small Business Technology Development Center, which is at 4747 Troost, and they offer fast-track courses. Mm-hmm. So the fast-track new venture course is for people that have an idea for a business, but that's where they are. They have the idea. They have not maybe gotten a lot further, and they don't know where to go.
Mm-hmm. Would there be anything – I'm sorry to interrupt. Mm-hmm. Would there be anything like a person could kind of look at steps, and they could kind of go through a series of steps that they feel comfortable with, and then visit with someone in one of the organizations that you're promoting?
The Small Business Development Center is actually the organization. If you attend a fast track course, that course will lead you through the steps that will help you. So going to them from the beginning is really a great first step forward. They're on the Missouri side, 4747 Troost. There's also the Women's Business Center, and it's at the, ECJC, Economic, I can't remember the C, at Johnson County, which is on Shawnee Mission Parkway. And they offer a course that is Fast Track New Venture, and it's mostly women in that course as well. So both of those, they can go to either one, and they can attend a course and really go through the paces of saying, hey, do I have an idea that is workable? Mm-hmm. And our objective here is for people to gather enough data that they make a good, solid decision, what we call go, no go. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you have a really fabulous idea, but it just is not feasible. Mm-hmm. And so we don't want to see people investing their time and effort and money in something that's not going to go. Mm-hmm. So we really want to put them in a position to make some great choices. And it's really useful for that. The other thing, and I'll mention on that, is there is something to be said for participating in a course like this because you get connected with other people. And this community aspect, it is a valid opportunity.
Why is it important to specifically boost women in their entrepreneurial goals? What is it about women that's makes it important for them to own their own business?
Well, that's this will be my personal opinion. I will tell you there's not necessarily research that would data point wise, but you know, women have a lot of impact on our economy. We are vast in numbers. More and more of us are, progressive as far as we have some really interesting ideas toward technology and other business development. We, as a group, really have a lot that we can do to impact our economy and our own personal financial future as well. Not only just the financial, which is great, but reaching our potential, being able to really succeed in an area that is something that you're passionate about is very important.
I've heard it said that women make 80% of the purchase decisions.
Yeah, I think that's right. Earlier I'd mentioned that, you know, I had kind of three main data points. What we can do to support that is women need more mentors. We need to have more people that we can have solid business discussions with that will help us as we work toward developing our businesses. So that's an opportunity that we have. So getting connected again in the community, whether it's through a fast track course and or 1 Million Cups, it's all about getting integrated and finding the resources that really are the fabric of what's making this a really strong entrepreneurial city.
And you know, something that comes to me right away is that should start in elementary school and carry into through K through 12. That's like something that the education has to be really focused on.
Absolutely. And, you know, when I decided a year or so ago to write my book called She Venture that you mentioned earlier, and part of the reason that I decided to write that book was there's a lot of information out there about the mechanics of how you start a business, but giving people, and especially women in this case, giving them kind of the vast opportunity to say, this is something that I can do. I wasn't exposed to it in grade school or maybe junior high, maybe today, maybe in high school. But to really get women thinking that this is a real opportunity, should they have the desire and the passion to do so, you know, there's just a tremendous amount of opportunity. And I mean, worldwide there is, certainly in the U.S., but we are beyond fortunate in Kansas City because we have more resources than almost any city in the U.S.
I have an opinion, sort of. sort of an opinion. It has been said that women have not been taught because they haven't typically been involved in sports, so they haven't been taught to be team players, and that there is a saying that, you know, a woman climbs the ladder and then pulls it up behind her. How do we encourage women to support other women? That seems to be, in my profession, there are very few women. I had no one to mentor me.
And not adhere to stereotypes. That's something that gets in my nerves, is stereotypes.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, I don't know. I think there are a lot of excuses as to why people haven't done something. And that's where I have not a big tolerance. I don't think there's any room for excuses here. There are opportunities. There are resources. If people are interested, they need to take advantage of them. They need women, in this case, since that's what we're discussing, need to kind of view themselves in that role. So I'll give you a separate example. Years ago, I had made my mind up that I wanted to run a marathon. And so I had gone and to a local running shoe store. And when I was there, there was a flyer by the cash register talking about a marathon training group. And I'm like, oh, wow, this is perfect timing. So I put it in my bag and went home. And, you know, as the date came closer for that meeting, I was like, oh, gosh, you know, what am I doing? I don't look like a runner. I'm not this young, you know, young, fast male athlete. I'm a middle-aged woman. And what am I doing? So I didn't go. And I tried to train on my own, and I couldn't do it. And so I didn't end up running that marathon. But 6 months later or thereabout, I was back in the market for a new pair of shoes, and I went back to the same store, and there was another flyer. At the time, I didn't realize marathons were fall and spring, which I just happened to be there at that time. So again, I picked it up, and this time I made the commitment to myself. It's like, I'm just going to go check it out. If I'm like the odd person in the room, I'm not going to worry about, I'll just kind of sneak out of there. I went, and it was like the room was filled with just the melting pot of humanity. Every age, every size, both genders. And it's like, wow. And I learned pretty quickly. In my mind, that was just like, it was like a light bulb. It's like, you know, I should never X myself out of something because of my own bias and my own ability to say, oh, I can't because I have young kids, or I can't because this. I don't have money. No. You know what? If you really want to learn about something, you want to try and figure out if this is right, pursue it. Understand it. Make some good determinations then.
I just absolutely love that, because I know it's gone through my head. Well, I've got a young kid. I can't be X, Y, and Z. I can't be going back to school. And then you do it, and it's not as hard as you think it is, but then it's still, you still do have to worry about some of those things. You do have to make adjustments. You may have to do things that other people don't. If you're, you know, more out of shape and you show up to a marathon training, you're going to have to put maybe a little more work in than somebody else, but you can still do it.
Absolutely.
And I think one of the key things that you're hitting on, Michelle, is really starting where you are. Just start, you know, and then the ball will just start rolling. You know, you'll start finding out different things, almost like it's being drawn to you, you know, because you're looking for it. And it, I just think about my mom and I, maybe a few weeks ago, saw the movie Joy. And so it's really nice that she talks about, you know, that it just tells the story of the actual lady who started the Miracle Mop and in her various adventures. And she had children and was, you know, living in a house with her mother and her, eventually her dad and her ex-husband. And, you know, and just, you know, she had a lot of actual circumstances that people can relate to. And she had challenges and, you know, and various things going on, but she did keep pursuing it. And I do think that that's something, as you mentioned, that you're worth fulfilling your own potential. And, you know, it's like that's a part of having a meaningful life. And it's exciting to me for women even to be able to change the landscape of the work environment, period. You know, and not even say, you know, some things we think, oh, well, this will be different because I'm not like such an, you know, a male or whomever can come to work and stay for however many hours. Well, it can be argued that maybe that isn't that healthy for us to have the work environments the way we've had them up until now.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. So taking time to really be thoughtful and think about, you know, think about your idea. And here's the thing. Some people feel like, and they don't, I think they don't even realize it, that A goes to B and B goes to C and C goes to D. It doesn't. It really doesn't.
Yeah.
I mean, it is a winding path, and everybody has experienced one step forward, two steps back, and that's okay. And so giving yourself permission to say, if this doesn't go absolutely according to my plan, is it the worst thing in the world? Not at all. It means is it's an evolutionary process, and to not be hard on yourself. Well, you know, sometimes people will say, and I hear this a lot, when they're thinking about business, they'll say, well, I don't really understand business financials. And they kind of want to whisper it to you, like, I don't get it. Yeah. And the reality is most people don't. And so, but guess what? You need to learn. And it's not, I'm not an accountant, and I'd be the worst in the world at that job. But I had to learn how to be able to understand how to figure out what my startup costs were going to be and how much I had to sell in order to support my business, you know, and just kind of the logical thing. So, again, I don't want people to think because they don't feel like they have all their ducks in a row with understanding business that it's a lost endeavor. I will tell you there have been more than 350,000 people that have come through Fast Track, and they all have had to learn key elements of business.
So where did So where did you start? I mean, this is going back, and it's kind of personal, but how did you start into the
business of promotion.
Well, I actually started as an entrepreneur myself and had my own business. And so these are a lot of lessons learned on a personal level as well.
Okay.
So.
Well, thank you so much, Michelle. I mean, this is, you know, has definitely been a great discussion and encouraging women, you know, no matter what your family or economic situation is, that if you have an idea, go ahead and pursue it and just see where it takes you. So we appreciate you for being in the studio with us today and bringing your daughter and having a full house here.
Thank you.
And could you give us one more time a web address or some contact information?
A web address, if you want to learn about Kauffman Foundation, is kauffman.org, K-A-U-F-F-M-A-N.org. And then 1 Million Cups is, it's easiest just to Google 1 Million Cups or Kauffman Founders School. And then finally, I want to just kind of reiterate UMKC Small Business Technology Development Center, 4747 Troost.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. We're going to go to break and we'll be back.
Jaws of Justice Radio investigates how we can achieve justice from a system of laws deeply rooted in economic, political, and social inequality. We strive to dispel misconceptions created by the news and entertainment industries, as well as the fear-mongering of the political system. Listen in as we search out the tools needed to make our community a more just environment. Jaws of Justice Radio, Mondays at 9 a.m., right after Democracy Now!
This week, it's religion and the Oscars.
There was a moment when we were researching the story, the four members of the Spotlight team, when we realized we had all been raised Catholic. At that time, I would say we were all lapsed Catholic.
We peek behind the curtain at the religious themes that gave rise to two Oscar-nominated movies, Spotlight and Son of Saul. I'm Maureen Fiedler. That's next time on Interfaith Voices.
Tuesday at noon, right before The Jazz Disciple.
This is Michael with the Ears to the T show, and this is our summer series, and we're here today with a very special guest. We have Mama Charlotte Hill O'Neill. Mama Charlotte is a former Kansas City Black Panther member. She is the wife of Pete O'Neill, who was also a member of the Black Panthers, and she's a mother and is presently the co-director of the United African Alliance Community Center located in Tanzania. She has a lot behind her name, and I'm going to ask if she can tell us more about herself.
Thank
Mama Charlotte, welcome to our show.
Thank you for that wonderful introduction, sister. And I'd like to add to your description of me that I am also an artist, a visual artist, a painter and sculptor and an art quilter. I'm also a musician and a poet. So, but first and foremost, I am still a community activist, which is what I have been since I was 18 years old and joined the Black Panther Party. I'd also like to point out that my husband, Brother Pete O'Neill, was the founder of the Kansas City chapter, and he was our chairperson. Mm-hmm. So, yes, and I'm feeling good here in Kansas City. It's a beautiful, beautiful day. And actually, I'm going back home to Arusha, Tanzania at UAACC in a few days. So I'm happy to do this interview with you, and I hope your listeners enjoy.
Well, I'm glad we were able to catch you on your whirlwind tour. You're just getting back from California. And before that, you were back here in Kansas City, and you spoke at a function with the Office of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion, where we were able to hear a little bit about some of the things that have been going on with you in Tanzania and about how you had lived in Kansas City before. Can you tell us a little bit about coming up in Kansas City?
I sure can. You know, and it has indeed been a whirlwind tour, sister. 3 months, can you imagine? 3 months, all kind of beautiful communities and Sometimes the weather wasn't too good, but today it is. Indeed, I grew up, I was born and raised in Kansas City. Kansas City, Kansas, as a matter of fact, Wyandotte County, went to Dunbar's North Grade School, mm-hmm. right off of 7th Street. Okay. And then I was what I like to refer to as a busing victim. Uh-huh. You know, my family's home was on Greeley, 8th and Greeley, but when I was 12, my parents built a house out there in Brentwood. It was called Weaver Estates. And because of that, I was in a different school zone mm-hmm. and had to be bused to Northwest Junior High School. This was actually my first time. This is actually my first time being with white students. This was a newly integrated school, and it was quite a challenge for me, especially because most of my classmates, school chums who I had grown up with, they were going to Northeast, where I had always dreamed of going. But I weathered the initial storm, and I got used to a whole different kind of community, and I think this is what probably started my curiosity about different people and culture all around the world. I've never lost that curiosity. I did very good in school. I went to Wyandotte High School, which was had been newly integrated for just 3 years. Mm-hmm. So again, that was a different kind of environment. I worked on the school paper there. I was very active in the orchestra and the choir and just about everything. I was inducted as a member of the National Honor Society. I had actually received a scholarship to go to a college in Austin. I wanted to be a doctor. And then I started seeing these news reports on TV. They were talking about Black Panther Party.
Here in Kansas City.
Here in Kansas City, uh-huh. sister. And I started seeing images of these brothers and sisters in the Kansas City Star newspaper and the Kansas City Call and some of the other papers. And I actually cut out some of the articles and taped them to my bedroom wall. And I would look at those, you know, these revolutionaries every day. And I never in my wildest dreams thought that I would actually meet Brother Pete O'Neill, and not only meet him but marry him at the age of 18 and still be his wife after 41 years.
Wow, that's something.
I always like people to know that it wasn't just the fact that these were some fine looking brothers in their berets and dark glasses and leather jackets. No, it was more than that. It was what I learned about the breakfast programs here in three locations. All the locations were churches. I know one was St. Stephen's. I think one was St. Mark's, I think. I don't remember what the other one was. What is the church that Mayor Cleaver is? St. Thomas? Whatever, it was three churches
okay.
who were very supportive. And this is where we would feed at least 750 children every day. And when you mesh this with the fact that these Breakfast for School Children programs were feeding thousands of children all over America and actually became the prototype, the pilot projects for the United States government, who had not started these free lunch programs or breakfast programs. It was the Black Panther Party who first started that. And sister, you know, it blows my mind, the fact that we were so young. Many of us were younger than 20, mm-hmm. were teenagers,
mm-hmm.
15. My brother-in-law, Brian O'Neill, he was 15 years old when he joined.
Mm-hmm.
I was 18.
Was there a lot of that kind of community service?
It was.
Stuff happening at the time?
It was, and you said such a key word.
Mm-hmm.
And those two words that you said is what has been our mainstay for all these years. As members of the Black Panther Party, we were taught community service.
Mm-hmm.
And the spirit of volunteerism. And this is what we have continued to impart at the United African Alliance Community Center. Being a member of the Black Panther Party, sister, taught me how to work very, very hard. It has just been a guiding light for so much in my life. It continues to impact me, and that's one of the biggest blessings that I have had in my life is being a Panther. Very proud of that experience, and it's something that many people continue to have misconceptions about what being a Panther was, to the point where they can even describe us as having been racist. You know why? Because the news media tried their best to portray us like that. Mm-hmm. And we were anything but that. Mm-hmm. We built coalitions with people from all community, all races. As a matter of fact, many people don't realize that our first field marshal in the Black Panther Party was a Japanese-American brother. Again, that's another thing that has continues to impact me, the fact that we continue to look at ourselves as members of the global community, the global family. And when I go on these speaking tours, sister, that is what I try to impart to all these young people that I speak to take the blinders off and check out your relationship to the rest of the world. It's interdependent now.
We've heard a little bit about you're coming up in Kansas City. That's when you first saw the Black Panthers and the literature and met your husband, P. O'Neill. Were there a lot of other people involved at the level, the age that you were involved?
Well, not a whole lot of people, but I can remember the day that it was announced that Reverend Martin Luther King had gotten assassinated, and we were in school at Wyandotte High School, and I was one of the youth who led a protest or demand or whatever that the flag be flown half mast. Mm-hmm. And the school didn't want to do it, so we led a walkout and we closed the school down. We led a walkout to Sumner High School because we wanted to liberate the youth there. And when we got to Sumner High School, they had gotten the word that we were coming. So they steered us. They're very smart. They didn't try to stop us or anything. They cooperated. That was so smart. And they steered everybody into the auditorium. And in the auditorium, we were able to do an impromptu tribute and also to let off steam, see. Mm-hmm. So later on, I remember some of the youth went up on Minnesota and some of them smashed windows and stuff, which we certainly weren't advocating that. So that was like a core group of activists. And I had been a member of the Kansas City School of Human Dignity. And what we did is go around to different schools and community centers and even churches and talk what we used to call Black history. I was also invited to do that in some of the classes in Wyandotte High School. So I was always, from the time I was 17, I guess, I was an activist.
I was asking how many other people were involved.
Oh, as far as the Black Panther Party went, I don't remember how many members we actually had, and that was something that was always rather sensitive, so I probably wouldn't tell you no way. But I'm making a joke. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But there was a pretty sizable core of young people who would, even if they weren't Panthers and couldn't go through the training that was mandatory, mm-hmm, to be a Panther, they at least would come and help, you know, in different programs and everything. Because we had not only the Breakfast for School Children program, we had a health clinic, the Bobby Hutton Free Medical Clinic. And we got support from various doctors and pharmacists who helped, you know, have things like vitamins and basic first aid where people could come there and, you know, get fixed up.
Mm-hmm.
And we work with the welfare rights organizations. We work with people to make sure that they knew their rights. So there were lawyers who would volunteer their time. It was like everybody wanted to do something, you know, across the board. It was a beautiful thing. And this was happening not only in America. It was happening in Africa. It was happening in parts of Europe. A lot of it. One of the bonding factors was the Vietnam War also. Brother Pete, he said that it's like there was a certain different powerful alignment of the planets that at that time that seemed to send out some kind of vibes that really made people come together. And I see a lot of that now during this year's Heal the Community Tour.
What is the Heal the Community Tour?
The Heal the Community Tour it came about basically, it grew out of the Heal the Community Exchange Program. Brother Pete inaugurated the Heal the Community Exchange Program in 1995 by making a solo climb of Mount Kilimanjaro.
Oh, really?
Yes. He said that's the the hardest physical thing he's ever done in his life. And he did this in order to illustrate to young people that if you are determined, if you are focused, if you're determined and focused, that you can do just about anything in your life. He inaugurated like that, and then through an essay contest, the first participants from De La Salle Education Center came to participate. They too climbed the mountain, and we coupled them with Tanzanian youth. They went up the mountain together. First participant was Vanessa Wedlow with her counselor, Sharon Thomas. Since then, we've had several of the same Hill Community Exchange programs, even where we were able to bring Tanzanian youth here who were able to share about their culture. Now, the Hill Community program...
Are they like exchange students or just for the tour?
Not really exchange students in the conventional sense of word. When the youth from Kansas City came, these were youth who had been having problems in their life. They might have been gang members, they might have problems with drugs, and at-risk youth who were getting a second chance at De La Salle. And that's what the program encompassed, working with at-risk youth. Bringing them to Tanzania, exposing them to Tanzanian youth who are living their dreams, you know, who are upstanding people in the community, but who share some of the same difficulties in life as they do. Exposing and immersing these youth from Kansas City into the culture there, and inevitably they will change. Inevitably, all these youth who have participated have come back to Kansas City and seriously done something with their lives. We continue to stay connected, and we get reports, and you know, we communicate sometimes. Okay. So it's a really, really good program.
How many students have been through this? Or how long have you been doing this?
We've been doing this since 1995. But the Hill Community Tour, talking about our work, and I'm going to explain the United African Alliance Community Center and what we do there.
Okay.
Speaking about our work, it's promoting the spirit of volunteerism, the spirit of community, networking, and lately, in the last couple of years, I've also had the blessing to be able to perform. You know, I've been singing a lot, I've been doing a lot of spoken words, so that's like an added bonus for me myself. I'm invited to many universities and community centers across America to do just this, and also to screen A Panther in Africa, which is about Brother Pete's history and our work, and it's by Aaron Matthews. It's an award-winning film that is still shown on PBS throughout the year all over across America and still in film festivals.
And that's dealing with him in Tanzania and the...
And his history here, too.
Yeah.
And some of his history here in America.
You were speaking about the work at the Hill Community Tour and at the United African Alliance Community Center. One of the things is bringing in troubled youth and helping them to see a different lifestyle,
right,
to convince them that they have some other alternatives.
Yes.
And they're choosing those alternatives.
Yes, and they're choosing those alternatives. And then
you said also some of the Tanzanian youth are able to come over here. What happens when they come here?
Well, they've been able to share about their culture, interact with the youth here, and impress upon them also this positivity and the positive lifestyle that they live. At the United African Alliance Community Center, we have daily classes for the youth there at our center. It is an integral part of the community. There's community ownership. We have language classes, computer classes, music classes, dance classes, debates, life skills classes, design and sewing. We have a music studio, Peace Power Productions, where youth in the community are able to come and realize their voices and make their poetry known. We have yoga, sports, but one of the most important relatively new programs that we have is the Leaders of Tomorrow Children's Home, where we're raising 22 children. Some are orphans, some come from very destitute families in our surrounding communities. And we're educating these children and providing their medical. They live right there with us. and they're able to maintain their community ties because, for instance, every month we have a community gathering where the elders come and the young people and the children show them demonstrate to them what they have been learning that month. There's a lot going on. We have a water project.
What is involved in that?
When Brother Geronimo Jijaga, who is one of our Panther comrades and who had been unjustly imprisoned here in America, he's a political prisoner for 27 years, and when he was finally released after years and years of bringing evidence before the court and family, they had to say, okay, yes, you're right, you're innocent. Uh-huh. They let him out. After I'd been there 27 years, and they gave him a large monetary compensation. He went to many places in the world, seeing what his comrades were doing and what needs they might have had. Our biggest need was water at the time. Mm-hmm. So not only for us, but for people in our village, you know, where sisters were having to walk like 4 or 5 miles a day to get a bucket of water. Bucket of water.
Right.
So he gave us $10,000 in order for us to dig a well.
Mm-hmm.
And when we dug the well, of course, the first thing we did was put taps for the community.
Yeah.
So that was the water project. And then we've had the solar project where we were able to bring in 85 solar panels. Mm-hmm. We want to expand the solar project and investigate about this new so-called green industry, because I think if we are able to bring something like that to our community, that not only will the environment benefit, but youth will be able to get jobs.
Yeah.
This is another thing that I learned during this tour about the opportunities in the green industry.
With the green industry, Do you see much of that over in Tanzania so far as solar projects or anything like that?
You do have solar projects, but I think some of the things I've been reading, and I want to investigate a little bit more before I can really make an educated discussion on it, is it's even more than solar power.
Yeah.
You know, it's the way people deal with the land,
mm-hmm.
you know, of course, wind power.
Right.
And water power, you know. So I'm kind of excited about that. No, really going to see what we can do. Another thing that I enjoy personally working with is the hip-hop artists there.
Mm-hmm.
Hip-hop is very, very strong in East Africa, indeed all over Africa. And I'm talking about socially conscious hip-hop that has taken it back to the way it used to be back in the day. So that in mind, we have conferences throughout the year on what can we do to keep hip-hop relevant to the community.
We've talked a lot about your beginnings here in Kansas City. We've talked some about what's going on in Tanzania with the United African Alliance Community Center, how the relationship with the Panthers has been in your life and with the work that you've been doing since you became involved with the Panthers. Where would you say things will be headed for yourself and for the projects that you're involved with?
I see myself and my husband continuing to expand as much as we can, because all of our work has always grown in a rather organic manner. Mm-hmm. It's not like we always say, okay, this is going to happen this year, that is going to happen this year. We have basic plans, but like I said, things grow organically. So I know that we will continue to offer opportunities for the young people that we work with. I'm very excited about working more with the children at the Leaders of Tomorrow Children's Home, because they are so talented and so smart, you know, and also expanding things with the youth that we work with now. People can find out more about the work that we do at our website.
What was that website?
It's www.uaacc.habari. That's H-A-B as in ball, A-R-I. www.co.tc. And also, I will continue to come to the States to commute back and forth, because it's good to get this word out. It's good to keep inspiring people. Mm-hmm. We host study abroad groups from colleges and universities all over America. And they come there and they participate and they volunteer. I don't think I said that all of our teachers at the center are volunteers. Mm-hmm. Many of them are students who graduated from our community programs and come back themselves mm-hmm. and volunteer. So I will definitely be back. And in the meantime, I will continue doing what I can, and my husband will continue doing what we can together to uplift our community and to provide positive examples for the youth and for the elders. I can't wait to get back into the studio, because I'm working on my fourth solo album. Mm-hmm. I have 8 tracks already, most of it is spoken word. But I love to be in the studio, and I love to perform, you know. So it's a lot to do. I also have, we're starting a project with Betty Shabazz International Charter School. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that we're doing is a video, kind of a webcam pen pal kind of thing. Oh. So we got to get ready for that. We're also doing a similar project with the Lotus Academy, which is a freedom school in Philly. A lot of exciting things going on. I am so inspired by the different communities that I visited this year. Mm-hmm. You know, the communities in Philly and in Brooklyn and in the Bronx and in Baltimore and D.C. and Chicago. In Chicago, I spoke at the DuSable Museum. There's a big exhibition on the Black Panther Party, and mm-hmm. one evening I talked about our work in history and screened the film A Panther in Africa, and the next night we had a panel discussion. There was 5 Panther sisters, and we took Q&A from the audience. Then there's the communities in California and in Seattle and in Phoenix and Atlanta, and I'm telling you, everywhere I have gone, I've seen the spirit of community, the spirit of family, the spirit of volunteerism is running rife, y'all. Mm-hmm. And it's growing and growing and growing, and I'm just happy to be a part of that.
Well, Mama C, I just want to thank you for allowing us to come and visit you, and to hear about all of your, or some of your, activities as a young student who was interested and curious and became an activist as a early member of the Black Panther Party in Kansas City. We were glad to hear about the things that are happening in Tanzania. It's good that we're able to talk about what's going on in Africa and to hear about the young students and the things that they're interested in.
Yes.
And this is with all the hardships, no water, you know, all the things you have to deal with, because it's a whole bunch you have to deal with sometimes. Yes. But the whole experience is something that people are glad they were able to be involved in.
I agree. Kali Bruni, that means welcome.
All right. Well, we thank you so much. This is Michael, and we're signing off.
Be sure to stay tuned for Urban Connections with Donna Wolf, and guess who's coming to Kansas City with MC Richardson. And catch us again next week on Every Woman.